Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org. And from Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Gun control and pro-gun advocates continue to clash over Florida's newest gun reform law.
The plans that have been approved for how individuals can be a part of this program, someone like George Zimmerman could get a job.
Also this week, are you a Democrat running for Florida governor? A winning strategy might be to talk about teacher pay.
I don't know how they do it. School teachers in Florida.
They're some of the best, but get paid among the worst.
We'll also find out why, more than a century and a half after the fall of the Confederacy, the Confederate flag remains a divisive banner in this country. And we'll get a preview of what could become a big fight in Florida's 2019 lawmaking session between a pro-vaccination coalition and those who oppose immunization on religious grounds. I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report. 2 months after it passed the state legislature, Florida's latest gun reform law is still under scrutiny from gun control and pro-gun advocates alike. Sasha Cordner has the latest.
With the okay of a local school district and law enforcement, the new gun reform law allows for the arming of some teachers and other school personnel through a voluntary guardian program. Classroom teachers who don't have any other duties like coaching would be excluded. School districts across the state are grappling with whether they want to join such a program, especially since lawmakers specifically devoted millions of dollars in the budget to those efforts.
The plans that have been approved for how individuals can be a part of this program, someone like George Zimmerman could get a job.
That's West Park Democratic Representative Chevron Jones. During the past legislative session, he spoke out against that particular provision in the law, also known as the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School Public Safety Act. It's named after the mass school shooting, which left 17 people dead and 17 others injured in February. Jones says he still, as he did then, has a lot of concerns as a member of the Black Legislative Caucus.
The fact that students of color are profiled more, period, brings an uneasiness to me when we are talking about arming our teachers, recognizing that Broward and Dade County has not adopted this measure. But you look at other counties that have large population of kids who look like students within my community. I think that it is very careless.
Jones calls it reckless that such a provision supported by the National Rifle Association was put in the new law that he believes also has good parts. Meanwhile, as for the NRA's Marion Hammer, she too has mixed feelings about the law. Speaking recently during NPR's All Things Considered, she touted how lawmakers provided funding to address mental health and the hardening of Florida's schools.
And all of that would have been beneficial. But they threw in what I call political eyewash. Nothing in the way of gun control in that piece of legislation would have had any impact whatever on the Parkland shooting or the Pulse nightclub. The bill requires a 3-day waiting period. The Parkland shooter went through a 5-day waiting period.
In addition to the waiting period, the new law includes raising the minimum age for gun purchasers from 18 to 21 and a ban on bump stocks, an add-on that can allow a semi-automatic weapon to fire like an automatic weapon with a single pull of the trigger. There is already a lawsuit filed against both of those provisions. Hammer's group particularly doesn't like the age limit and brought a federal legal challenge. The NRA also tried to make a 19-year-old woman who wants to join the lawsuit anonymous. Hammer, who says she's received threatening emails, fears the woman will be harassed as well. The state wants that motion dismissed. Meanwhile, as to the lawsuit as a whole, Republicans in House and Senate leadership appear confident in the constitutional muster of the new law. Here's Florida House Speaker Richard Corcoran speaking to reporters in March after the end of the legislative session.
I say it all the time. I think I've been sued more times than any other presiding officer. And I don't think we've lost a case. I don't think we'll lose a case. I think what we did was constitutional. It was extremely impactful. And it will go down. And 5-10 years, people will talk completely differently about the bill we passed, including the NRA.
Still, Corcoran did side with the NRA when it came to adding some controversial provisions to the state constitution that came before Florida's Constitution Revision Commission. The CRC is a panel that meets every 20 years to revise the state's constitution and put the matter before voters on the 2018 ballot. Weeks after the bill became law, Corcoran sent a letter to the CRC saying he's against adding an assault weapons ban and an extended waiting period to the state constitution, and those issues will not be appearing on the November ballot. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
During this National Teacher Appreciation Week, Florida's Democratic gubernatorial candidates in the wide-open primary tried to score points with educators. Meanwhile, Ryan Daly reports the GOP race settled into two candidates who are just beginning to hone their criticisms of each other.
That's why, as governor, I'm going to bring it home by putting $1 billion more into public education.
I'm going to be working for you, working to make sure you're paid what you deserve, working to make sure that your class size is manageable.
Well, that's why my son Philip is talking about raising their salaries $10,000 or more.
That was Florida gubernatorial candidates Andrew Gillum, Gwen Graham, and the mother of candidate Philip Levine speaking on his behalf. This week in Florida's Democratic gubernatorial race saw each candidate compete for the votes of Florida's public school teachers, from tweets to television ads. Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum and his Miami Beach counterpart Philip Levine got specific with their dollar amounts. Gwen Graham dressed in red and lent her support to the Red for Ed movement. And Orlando businessman and political novice Chris King, who has not yet cracked into the television ad market, tweeted he would look to give teachers the resources and pay they deserve. Meanwhile, a feud has been developing between the race's two North Florida candidates. Gillum launched an ad that, according to Politico, cost nearly $800,000, bankrolled by a political action committee attacking Graham as a phony progressive. Graham responded by piling on criticism Gillum has been enduring this week regarding hundreds of thousands of dollars in dark money he's received from committees that don't have to disclose their donors. Then there's the GOP race, which this week became a solidly two-man contest.
As I said for the last year or so, we would look to run for governor or go home.
That's Florida House Speaker Richard Corcoran announcing he will abstain from running for governor, instead putting his support behind Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam. At a GOP candidate forum over the weekend that was devoid of attacks, Putnam and U.S. Congressman Ron DeSantis outlined their positions on a number of issues, education among them. DeSantis, asked about policy for interrupting generational poverty, championed scholarships that give parents control over their students' funding, allowing them to use it for private school tuition.
I'd like to see educational scholarship accounts for every student that's on free and reduced lunch. Let's give these folks the ability, the parents the ability, to make the most of their kids' lives, and I think they will make the better decisions.
Like DeSantis, Putnam focused on students rather than teachers in discussing his education priorities.
My first act will be to restore technical and vocational training and put it back into our middle schools and back into our high schools.
Whatever goodwill was built at the weekend forum had seemingly worn off by midweek when the DeSantis camp released a statement on Corcoran's support of Putnam, calling it the, quote, endorsement of a fellow career insider, one that will only matter to his fellow swamp dwellers. When asked for a response to the statement during his announcement, Corcoran took a jab at DeSantis's frequent appearances and mentions on Fox News, asking, quote, was it from a studio in New York? For Florida Public Radio, I'm Ryan Daly.
Pointing to improper closing arguments, a state appeals court today ordered a new trial in a case in which Domino's Pizza faced an $8.1 million verdict because of a car accident involving a delivery driver. A panel of the 5th District Court of Appeal, however, rejected arguments that Domino's could not be held vicariously liable for the actions of the driver who worked for a franchisee of the pizza chain. The Orange County case stemmed from a 2011 accident in which motorist Richard Wiederhold swerved to avoid another vehicle that had pulled out in front of him. Still to come on Capitol Report. For some, the flag most associated with the fallen Confederacy is an emblem of Southern heritage and pride. But for others, it symbolizes a dark time in the nation's history.
There was a heritage of slavery. There was a heritage of murder. There was a heritage of pillage. There was a heritage of rape. There was a heritage of sodomy.
A new statewide coalition of healthcare professionals, educators, and parents would like fewer children to opt out of Florida's list of required vaccinations.
They are trying to get legislation to promote more effective vaccination of our children.
And the phrase, now you're cooking with gas, used to be a compliment. But today in Florida, it seems too many power plants are cooking with nothing but gas. And that could become a very big problem when, not if, the price of gas starts going up.
The price of the natural gas is the prudent thing to do.
In a time of profound political polarization, the Confederate flag remains a divisive symbol. Sean Mulcahy reports the remnants of the Confederacy are still shaping today's society, and the fallen flag means vastly different things to different people. Here are some of their stories.
I'll say my uncle was in a particular state, and his brother, which was my uncle, was hung, okay, because they got into a scuffle with some whites. Okay, found him, hung him, and my uncle took revenge and had to travel all the way this way. That's how I kind of got here.
Jarvis Rozier is the Civil War Heritage Coordinator at the John G. Riley Center in Tallahassee.
There was other instances right here in Tallahassee. I'm going to the movies. I was born during segregation, so we went to what used to be the State Theater right there on Monroe Street, which is now the federal courthouse. Blacks were upstairs and whites were downstairs. I remember going inside in the back of McCoy's, and my dad and my brothers were talking about getting spit on and things of that nature there. So, yes, I've seen it. You know, I've lived it.
I had gone with my grandmother to vote, and this was before the Civil Rights Act was passed, and I mean the Voter Rights Act.
That's Dale Landry. He's a civil rights advocate and a former president of the Tallahassee NAACP.
And the place we went in Panama City used to be what was called the Teen Center. And the kids that were parked there had their trucks, and all their trucks had the flags and things of this nature. And as my grandmother walked up to vote, they stepped out, deputy standing there, called her a nigger bitch, spit on her, right? But I was a young kid, 8 or 9 years old, and was ready to fight. And but my grandmother wiped it off and said, let's go. And we turned and walked, and we left. I never forgot that.
H.K. Edgerton. I am president of Southern Heritage 411 and a member of Save Southern Heritage Florida. It is a part of my heritage. It is a symbol. It is a symbol of the South. It is a part of my ancestors' heritage. It is a part of the place of honor and dignity earned by folks of all colors here in the Southland of America.
For me, it's a historical flag of, it's an American flag. My name is Kelly Crocker, and I'm the area commander of the Sons of Confederate Veterans.
Yes, it means heritage to someone, but it was a heritage of derogatory hate. There was a heritage of slavery. There was a heritage of murder. There was a heritage of pillage. There was a heritage of rape. There was a heritage of sodomy. So that's what people of color see, okay, when we think about that.
Just the image of it, it sparks post-traumatic stress among a lot of African-Americans that lived during that era. And then those that have been subjected to white hate groups. And see, here in the state of Florida, when you start looking at groups that are coming up on you with the Confederate flags and things, you don't know what their intents are, you see. And in a state that has reached to the place of stand your ground, it invokes fear.
Yes, the use of the Confederate battle flag has been perverted. One organization uses it, or has used it, the KKK. But if you look at history, you'll see that the KKK used the United States flag first. In fact, they claim that that's their flag today.
They're right in some sense that the hate groups, the KKK, the Aryan groups or whatever, they have taken their flag, okay? They're taking their flag because their flag represented what they represent.
Growing up in Panama City, when the Ku Klux Klan would come in and do their annual parade around the 4th of July, they would come in and they would ride down the street, you know, and all their cars flew a combination at times of both the Confederate flag as well as the United States flag, but the prevalence was their Confederate flag.
I can't force them not to ride a flag because they have a First Amendment right of free speech just like I do, and their ancestors fought and died under the flag just like mine did.
People aren't just divided on the meaning of the flag. They even disagree on the causes of the Civil War.
The war had many causes. Another term I like to use is follow the money. Probably the tariffs, taxation without representation. Those are some of the major causes, and slavery was an issue. But I believe if slavery would have been the prominent issue, that perhaps President Lincoln would have done something about it as soon as he took office. The Emancipation Proclamation was not issued until 2 years into the war.
It's a crazy answer if you ask me to say that it was about tariffs. But what else was it about? Like I said, during that time, it was a $4 billion industry in 1861. You equate that today's time, it's a $73 billion industry. So were you worrying about taxation? Were you worrying about tariffs? Or were you worrying about the economy that was going to suffer if you lost your slaves?
But if, as it seems, the Confederate flag is so controversial, is there any hope at finding common ground?
I love it when people preach diversity and inclusion, because Confederate history and those who support Confederate history are part of the diversity, and we should be included as well.
The people that I sit with over here on the Confederate side, and there are a lot of blacks, they want to sit down at the table of brotherhood.
The current environment we're in, under our current president, we've gone divisive again in a big way. I'm very fearful of our nation and the division that we're in right now.
But where do we go from here? We hope and pray that we get people in places that can understand the importance of one issue and the importance of the other, and somehow get in the middle and make it happen. But I think it's generations from us.
As monuments continue to come down, 150 years after the war, people are still grappling with the legacy of the Confederacy. To some, the flag represents years of hatred, hardship, oppression, and the fight for equality. To others, it's pride and a celebration of cultural heritage. But for now, it appears the flag will continue to divide. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sean Mulcahy.
Tallahassee's Kathy Mayfield and her husband Emery have tragic firsthand experience on the importance of being immunized against dangerous diseases.
When we lost our daughter in 2009 to bacterial meningitis, she was 18 years old, I didn't know anything about meningitis. I thought it was a disease that affected babies. I found out that all kinds of different strains of bacterial meningitis, many of them are vaccine preventable. Lawson did not have the meningitis vaccination. I thought she'd had everything required. She had had everything required. It's just amazing how much information people are not aware of.
In her daughter Lawson Mayfield's memory, and to help be a source for information about vaccination, her mom founded the annual Run for Lawson and also advocates for the National Meningitis Association.
There's a number of different vaccinations that are available. There is a new bacterial meningitis vaccination called MenB that's available that's not required, but it is suggested that we talk to our healthcare professionals about it.
But it's up to the adult patient or parents of the minor child patient to broach the subject. Dr. John Katapotis is the president of the Florida Medical Association. That organization is part of a new network called Immunize Florida that is promoting more widespread vaccinations to fight more preventable diseases in the state.
What's happened is many people do not get the immunizations for a variety of reasons. And that's what Immunize Florida is about. They are trying to get legislation to promote more effective vaccination of our children.
One issue of great concern to Katapotis is how easy it is in Florida for parents to opt their children out of the standard vaccination requirements. He cites the case of California.
They had fairly liberal exemption rules, and then they ended up with a measles outbreak in California. And more recently, they changed the rules to make it more difficult to obtain those exemptions.
But in Florida, opting a child out of vaccination requirements remains pretty easy. One exception is for medical reasons, but that must be signed off on by a doctor. Katapotis says the problem exemption is the one for religious reasons, which is originated by the parents of the child.
There may be some situations where an objection is completely valid for whatever that family's value system is. But in order to become exempt, we should probably really have a far more rigorous process to make sure that it's just not done with a simple signature on the form.
Even if Florida manages to avoid a mass outbreak like California's measles scare 3 years ago, Dr. Katapotis says unvaccinated children can still pay a price.
One of my acquaintances, his granddaughter ended up with pertussis or whooping cough and landed in the ICU last week. That's a horrible thing. She was never immunized.
And Kathy Mayfield, whose daughter Lawson paid an even steeper price for not being immunized, thinks a change in Florida law is at least part of the answer.
I think all of these different factors can be helped and assisted by Immunize Florida, and it's just one more example of why Immunize Florida is important and why it is so important for all of us to pay attention to the new vaccines or things we might not be aware of from the old existing vaccinations.
But the legislative effort may be in for a battle. Religious groups that consider vaccinations a violation of God's law have already launched a social media campaign. It's opposing any changes to the state law that now allows parents to opt out their kids from the state's required vaccinations with a simple stroke of a pen. In a case dealing with the controversial issue known as assignment of benefits, a state appeals court today sided with a contractor in a dispute with an insurance company about a water damage claim. A panel of the Second District Court of Appeal overturned a circuit judge's ruling that had been in favor of Homeowners Choice Property and Casualty Insurance Company. The Hillsborough County case stemmed from a pipe bursting in 2012 in the home of Homeowners Choice policyholder Richard Prager. You're listening to Capital Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, with the state's energy portfolio surpassing 60% natural gas, Florida's utility regulators are pushing for greater diversity. Regan McCarthy has more.
During a recent meeting, as members of the Public Service Commission approved plans for new power plants in the state, Commissioner Donald Pullman raised concerns about what he sees as a trend toward greater dependence on natural gas.
Across Florida, we see a shift towards a greater reliance on a single fuel type.
Pullman says he can understand why companies are switching to natural gas, but he says the commission may need to begin taking a broader view of the issue.
In the larger picture, there can be some concerns about further consolidation to natural gas, looking at the fleet of electric generation across the state. And I think it may be appropriate for this commission to continue to consider that in the larger picture.
Commissioner Gary Clark and Chairman Art Graham say they agree with Pullman's assessment, but Graham points out while he's open to more diversity, it is difficult to discourage natural gas use.
The problem you run into, though, is right now, and especially with the facts that came before us in this case, the price of the natural gas is the prudent thing to do.
Natural gas accounts for more than 62% of the state's energy production, with coal making up about 17% and nuclear coming in at 14%, while renewable energy sources like solar make up just about 3%. But changing that distribution may be difficult. On the same day commissioners considered the natural gas power plants, they also heard a request to let Tampa Electric recover costs for a solar project. Mark Ward oversees solar strategy for Tampa Electric. In order for solar projects to be cost-effective for his company, he says a number of factors need to align. John Moyle, an attorney representing the Industry Power Users Group, questioned Ward about that during the recent PSC hearing.
You were able to take advantage of the tax exemption, the ad valorem tax exemption on the properties that are being talked about here, is that right?
That was another item that helped solar be cost effective.
Ward says another factor that helped is that Tampa Electric purchased the modules or solar panels at a time when they were less expensive.
What I do know is there's the modules are more expensive than they were a year ago, and there's less supply right now.
A report produced by the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy earlier this year shows despite progress from utilities, Florida falls below average for utility-scale solar production compared to other southeastern states. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Ryan Daly, Lynn Hatter, and Regan McCarthy. We also thank Sean Mulcahy. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And please join us each week at this time for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at wfsu.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. AbleTrust.org. And from Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.